Hello, this is Mustafa Kasap. Today we are going to continue our ML mini-series on Cloud Cover. Together with me, I have a special guest, Hank, and I have my colleague, Hannah, to host our guest. We will be talking about Microsoft data science processing utilities, and Hank will give some details about that.
Hi, my name is Hank Zhang. I'm a senior data scientist at Microsoft. Today, I'm going to introduce Microsoft Team Data Science Process, which is a Microsoft product targeting to make each enterprise data science organization more productive in this business changing to be data-driven. Today, I'm going to talk about some basic concepts of Team Data Science Process, how a data science team can standardize on some process in order to carry out the data science project in a standardized way, and also some mechanism to make the data scientist team grow and learn and to be more productive over time as the team grows.
Yeah, I guess this topic is actually generic to all kind of machine learning tools or any machine learning related project. It's not specific to any Microsoft product.
No, this is more like a thinking process, but we are going to introduce some of the tools by Microsoft that can help you to be more productive.
Yeah, and these tools, I guess, they are written in Python, R, and open source.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. So today I'm going to show you one utility we developed. It is called Interactive Data Exploration, Analysis, and Reporting. We call it IDEA. We published IDEA in three versions now. Yeah. One is in open source R, one is in Python 3.5, and another one is in Microsoft R server for big data.
Great. Okay, let's start then.
Yeah, everybody is now is talking about data science, right?
Yeah.
So what is data science? Let me first give a brief overview of what is data science. Yeah. So data science is an interdisciplinary area that requires skills from different areas, such as computer science, math, and statistics, and some domain expertise in some specific business vertical.
Yeah.
For example, if you look at this chart, you can see that, okay, the hacking skill more like computer science, you need to know how to write code to tackle the data, right? To understand, to extract some useful information. basically, data science originates from the math and statistics. So you need to know what kind of statistics you need to extract from the data in order for you to understand the business better, right?
Yeah.
Of course, you also need the domain expertise, because if you don't have the domain expertise, you don't understand really what all the statistics means from the data, right? Mm-hmm. So you see here, those are the three skill sets needed by a data scientist.
Yeah.
But usually, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. To find such a person with all these three sets.
Right.
So almost all the data science team, they have a kind of hybrid system. That means they have different people with different backgrounds. I think that's almost universally true.
Yeah, especially regarding this domain expertise. If you are doing a project on, for example, IoT space or any other industrial vertical, I mean, it's a very huge area, and many times it's not possible to have all expertise on all these verticals.
It's
one another problem.
So, because every different business verticals, they are pretty much separate.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, if you are working in the e-commerce company, probably you want to know which customers are likely to churn. Right.
Okay.
So in this way, you need to understand what's the definition of the churn, right?
Yeah.
Some company might define, okay, when the customer activity is lower than, say, 5% of the regular customer activity, then you consider that as a churn. But you really need to understand the business. If you detect the churn so late, whether you still have time to bring the customer back. So you really need to understand the business vertical before you can deliver or build any machine learning solution.
And really have a defined solution or a problem that you want to solve. Right. So not just understand that customers could churn, but what churn means.
And also,
basically,
you also need to understand the physical process that is generating the data. Right. Because if you don't understand that one, you are very likely to fall into those kind of problems that you either have a target leaker in your data, or you don't know what features can be important for your machine learning model, right? And if you think about this, machine data science goes beyond, if you know business analytics or business intelligence, right? So data science goes beyond those two areas, business analytics and business intelligence. So business analytics and business intelligence, usually people look at the data retrospectively to understand what has happened, right? And to also to understand why it is happening, right? So we call this one as descriptive analysis and diagnosis analysis. But, I mean, for many e-commerce company, they did this a lot. They try to understand, for example, which products are sold best in my past week, right? Or which queries users use a lot, mostly on my website to search for products, right? You know what is happening, what has happened before, why it is happening. But now data science goes one step beyond that one. They want to know what will happen. So we call it a predictive analysis. And be more than that, the business verticals, many companies, they want to know how I can do things to make things happen. For example, I did a project before, which is a restaurant chain. A restaurant chain. And they want to know, okay, for my specific restaurant store, how many customers I can, I'm going to get, right, for the next 1 week. But they also want to, they are more interested to know, okay, how, what I can do in order to increase that customer number. Such as whether I have more tables on my store, in my store, or whether I have more waiters in my store. So those are things, we call it prescriptive analysis.
I guess the next step will be something like, don't worry, we will handle everything on behalf of you.
So why data science is so important, right? So we are, people are talking about the fourth industrial revolution, right? So the fourth industrial revolution is coming, or it's happening now because of the big data IoT. Everyone has their cell phone, it is collecting data from you, where you are, what you are doing with a cell phone, and sent to the company, right? To some data collecting company. And also because of the emerging and the development of the cloud computation, so it is more accessible to almost every company, right? Because we say Amazon or Azure is providing, are providing infrastructure or computing as a service, right? So it is more accessible. And also the AI, because especially most recently because of the development in deep learning, it becomes more and more overwhelming. That is driving a lot of companies to be data-driven business. So, and the opportunity is huge. That's the reason why I guess many companies are investing in data science, as estimated by a company by Microsoft and IDC in April 2014, in the next 4 years, the data-driven business can bring us about $1.6 trillion dividend from data. So I think that's the opportunity is really huge. But let's look at these statistics. It's really not so encouraging. So you see this one based on the survey from Capgemini in 2014, only 27% of the big data projects are regarded as successful. And only 8% of the big data projects are regarded as very successful. So it's really discouraging the current status of the big data. Big data is there, but we're not using the data so productively. So the reason why we developed the team data science process is trying to help the enterprises to be more successful in their investment in data science.
Yep. In a more disciplined way to execute their projects.
Yeah. Great. So about 1 month ago, or 3 weeks ago, I went to the Strata San Jose. So there was a talk by the data science director of LinkedIn, and I was in her session, and if you read the description of her talk, she mentioned beyond being the sexiest job in the 21st century, data science is a rewarding career.
Yeah.
It's also really hard. Mm-hmm. Not just the technical world itself, but also how to do the work well in an organization. I want to highlight this one.
Yeah.
So I reached out to her after her talk, asked her, okay, how we can do data science work well in an organization. So we had a few discussions. So I think one point we both agree is that we need to standardize the data science process. So why we need a standardized process? As I mentioned before, every data science team consists of people with different backgrounds. So they do things differently, right? So if we can standardize on the process, for data scientists, a standardized data science process can support the collaboration because you know each other what you're doing and what are the next things we need to do, right? And you can support quality assurance. So such as you can introduce some concepts like practices like code review, Git branching practices, something like that. You can also support security control project assets. For example, many projects, if you're doing client project for financial institute, they will have a clear requirement that my asset can only be accessed by a small group of people. No one else can access. So that's the security control.
Yep.
It can also support the better planning and tracking. So we were proposing, say, in TDSP, we're saying you need to do some kind of agile practice or scrum planning to be to help yourself to be more planned. Because every data scientist very likely is working on one or two projects simultaneously. And every project is done by one or two or even more data scientists. So you need to plan. And so for standardization, for organization, a standardized data science process can provide convenience for management to plan and to track. Your manager, my manager, wants to know what is happening, what is going to be happen next, right?
Yep.
And it can accumulate knowledge and expertise over time to continuously improve the productivity. So later I'm going to talk about the concept of the data science utility repository within each organization so that you can enrich that data science utility repository within your organization over time. So the other projects can directly borrow some utilities there without inventing the wheels every
over
time.
And over
right?
Again. Yeah.
So I also want to quote some endorsement from a user, a company, external company who is actively practicing TDSP, team data science process. We happen to know them. They are voluntarily practicing on this one because they feel good. So we talked with this data science director, and he said, I agree this very much with what he said. Technology changes fast, but process does not. Aligning on the same standard as the process helps us to be successful and be continuously successful. So you see the technology is changing daily.
Yeah.
Today, you have deep learning. Even deep learning, you have a lot of new algorithms there. CNTK, MX, Next, or TensorFlow. It is happening every day. And how you can make sure your organization is successful no matter what the technology change. So I think the standard process is very the key thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
So talk about the standardized process. There's another survey by KD Nuggets in 2014 is asking people what kind of process are you following, right? Many people say, okay, the majority is saying, okay, I'm following the CRISP-DM. It stands for Cross Industrial Standard Processing for Standard Process for Data Mining. So 43% are using. You see the second one is my own.
Yeah.
If you talk about my own, you have the computer science background, you have the physics background, I have the statistics background.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We do things differently. Mm-hmm. How we can align, make them align on the same process,
yeah.
That's the key. So this is the flow chart of the CRISP-DM.
Yeah.
So every project starts with business understanding, mm-hmm. right? Your business partner, your client is reaching out to you, hey, I have a business problem, help me with your machine learning. But most likely, they come to you with a fuzzy definition. Mm-hmm. They don't have a clear idea what they want to do. They just say, okay, this is my business problem, this is my data, help me. So the first step after you get that business request, you need to understand the business, right? That's the domain expertise you need to have.
Right.
And at the same time, because they have the business problem, they provide you the data that they assume it is relevant, but it not might be true.
Yeah.
So you have to do business data understanding mm-hmm. to make sure that the data is relevant to the business problem the customer is interested in, right? So there are a few back and forth iteration to make sure that we have the relevant data, or in another way, we have the relevant business problem that data can handle.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, the hacking skills is also helping there.
Yeah. Exactly. So now the next step is going to data preparation. You know, you do some feature engineering, data cleaning, something like that. And you do modeling, and then you do evaluation, and you deploy. Of course, many times you need to retrain your model.
Right.
So you need to redo this circle again and again. Right. So one big drawback we feel about this. CRISP-DM is that it is telling you those major steps you need to do, but it does not tell you exactly what you need to do each step. Right? It does not provide those kind of detailed guidance.
Right.
For example, business understanding.
Mm-hmm.
How I can understand the business problem, what kind of questions you need to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So many times you can ask some kind of bad questions, such as, what I can do with my data.
Very generic.
Yeah, very generic, right? How I can prevent my customer churn, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. So then we think, okay, we are in, this is the data science lifecycle we propose for the ERT DSP. If you looked into this one, it is nothing much so different with the CRISP-DM, but we provide more details.
Yeah.
For example, here, if you look at the swim lane for our standard process, we're telling you, okay, for the business understanding, the project manager and business owner, they need to have define a project charter.
Yeah.
And later I'm going to show you a template, document template for the project charter. We are asking you 15 or 20 questions there. So if you find the answers for those questions, you have your problem defined well.
Already,
Okay.
All these available on GitHub. As it's open source, you can clone these repo and continue your
way. Everything is on GitHub, so you can go there to get all the templates and also get the utilities I'm going to mention later on. So, for example, when you do the data ingest and understanding, you need to generate some data summary report and the data pipeline definition architect, something like that. So, the objectives of TDSP is that for each data science project, we standardize the execution of data science project by following a standardized lifecycle, standardized Git repository structure, and standardized document templates. And we ensure version control, quality assurance, project asset security control, and collaboration among different personnel in the project. And also boost the productivity by shared data science utilities. And for the entire data science team, the team can learn and grow over time, and it accumulates knowledge and expertise over time.
So
far, this is March of 2017. We released TDSP in September 2016. We have already had three releases. So in December 2016, we released the idea in Python 2.7, and last week, last Friday, we released the March 2017 with MRS for big data and in Python 3.5.
Yep. And today we will actually give some demo on IDR utility.
Yeah, I'm going to do that later on. It's a very fun tool you can use for everybody. And there are four fundamental components of TDSP. One is called standardized project lifecycle, standardized document templates, shared distributed resources, and productivity tools, and shared utilities. So let me switch the screen to some demo I have here. So this is the project template. So you see here the project charter. Mm-hmm. Well, asking the business owner and the project lead a set of hard questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Say, for example, when you in the beginning, you need to understand the business background, right? So then we say, okay, who is the client? What business domain the client is in? Mm-hmm. And what business problems are we trying to address? And when we define every project needs to have a scope of work, right?
Yeah.
Then we need to say, okay, we're asking questions, what data science solutions are we trying to build? What will we do? And how is it going to be consumed by the customer, right? Yep. So, et cetera. Also, you need to define what are the performance matrix.
Yep.
You evaluate when later on, how do you define whether this machinery solution is successful or not, right? And also, you want to get the commitment from the customer, what is their consuming plan? We cannot say, okay, I'm building a machinery solution, and later on the customer say, okay, I'm not going to use it. So you are wasting your time. So, So those are the very key things before you start building a new machinery solution, you have to have this document, the project charter well defined, and then you share with everybody so everybody can be on the same page.
Yeah.
Right? Now let me show you another a utility we developed. So this is called the Interactive Data Exploration, Analysis, and Reporting. So I'm going to show you the version in open source R.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before, we have the idea in Python 3.5 and in Microsoft R Server for big data.
Okay.
So by the way, Microsoft R Server, many people say, okay, it's a charged product. Actually, we do have a free developer's version. So everybody should be able to download that developer version and get all the benefits of the MRS to handle big data.
Yep,
right.
Great.
So now let me show you here. So to run this idea, you need to say open in RStudio. By the way, if you are a user of the Visual Studio with R tools for Visual Studio, this tool also runs on Visual Studio.
Because it is just R script, open source R script that's available on our GitHub repository. They can download and run it on any IDE that they want, not just Microsoft R Server or any other tools.
Yeah, exactly.
And here we are using the R Studio, which is the external.
R Studio. So we want to want our utilities to be friendly to everybody, the open source community. So I'm showing you using R Studio. So what you do here is that in RStudio, you open this run idea.r. So, and you click source. And then it is asking, giving you a alert, pop-up or an alert window saying, okay, the next window you need to select a YAML file.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then another window pop up, and here I'm showing you the format of this YAML file. For example, the YAML file is providing the information to the IDEA tool. Where is my data? What's the format of the data? Right?
The structure of the data.
For example, where is my data? Whether this data has a header or not? Whether it is, what's the separator of columns? And also, if you know which columns are categorical, which columns are numerical, you can specify here. But in many cases, your client is just giving you a wide data with hundreds of columns, right? Say, okay, now this is my data, go ahead to run it, to try it, without giving you any information which variables are categorical, which variables are numerical. So if you don't have that information in the very beginning, you can leave these two fields out.
Yeah.
The tool will do the automatic data type detection for you.
Okay.
Great.
And the detected result will be output to another YAML file.
Okay.
So many times, based on the logic hard coded in the tool, you might feel okay. Some some variables are detected running, so you can do some fine-tuning on that updated YAML file, too, and later on, gradually, you can reach to the ground truth of the data, right?
Yep.
Great.
And also, which column is the target, and which column will you want to exclude from this analysis, and also, which columns are the date time columns. So this tool is going, if you specify which columns are date time column, it will do some date time components automatic extraction for you. Mm-hmm. So that provides you some convenience. So here, the data I'm using in this demo is the NYC text data.
Yeah.
So the task is that to classify whether a passenger is going to tip the driver or not.
Oh, okay.
So after the trip completes. So this might be interesting for the driver. They need to decide, okay, which, if there are a lot of demands, at the same time they need to decide which one to go, right? Okay. Another important field is the log file. The log file, we're going to use this one to save the R script that is generating what you see on the screen. Mm-hmm. So later on, after we are done with the interactive data exploration, you want to generate some data report. Mm-hmm. This script code is going to be running and to generate your final data report.
Yeah.
So I'm going to show you that capability later. So let me open this one.
Actually, IDR utility that we are now showing, it's a tool to explore the data, raw data that you have, that you get from your customer, and generate a report out of this data, tell you what kind of features inside this data, what you can do with this data, what are the important columns, which are the columns that you can omit, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. So IDR is trying to, so every time as a data scientist, when he gets the data from the customer, there are several questions he wants to answer. The first question is that how my data looks like, right? Mm-hmm. What is my data quality? How many missing value I have there, right? And what are the general statistics of my data, right? And then he wants to go to each individual variable. What are the, say, mean standard deviation of those individual numerical variables? Mm-hmm. What are the, say, histogram of my categorical variables?
Right.
So that's the individual variable level. Then after he's done with that individual variable, he wants to understand what are the relationship of multiple variables, right? Also, then we help you, we provide functionality from individual variable to multiple variables.
Okay.
And also many times if you are, say, for example, you are in the customer relationship management, CRM, you want to know whether my customer has any segmentation pattern, right?
Yeah.
So we provide some utility functionalities to help you to visualize the high dimensional data by projecting to the principal component space. So you can visualize high dimensional data but in those two or three dimensional space to see whether there's any pattern there.
Yeah.
So you see here, this one completes running. So it first give you it calls data quality report. Then it first summarizes the data. So say what data you have, how many columns you have, and what are the numerical variables, what are the categorical variables. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to the take a peek of the data by showing the top rows of the data.
Yeah.
So for me, if I'm using Linux, right, every time I get a data file, I run less or more to that file name, then I get the first 20 rows print out on my screen. Mm-hmm. So this one is supporting that functionality. So the interactive becomes that, okay, now I'm printing out by default, I'm printing out the top 10 rows, I want to only print out the top 5 rows. You see it's here. If you want this one to be in your final data report, click export. The code that is generating, printing these 5 rows is written to that log file.
Okay.
You specify in your YAML. And now it has the dimension of the data. It only has 20 solid rows. Export. Okay, the names and types of your columns, and also the checking the data quality.
Yeah.
Using this kind of heat plot. So and also we by default we show you the top variables with highest missing value percentage, and also we also help you to segment.
Yeah.
So show you, okay, which segment has the highest rate of missing value. So this can help you identify exactly where my data missing value happens, right?
For this data, I guess there is nothing
yet. This is perfect. Okay. Now, summarize the basic statistics of the data. And now let's say, okay, now I'm done with the general statistics. I want to go to individual variables. Now, okay, this is my target variable. It is called tip.not. It's 1 or 0. So you see histogram. So it looks like, okay, roughly they are equal a little bit. The tipped chips are a little bit more than the non-tipped. On the export, okay. Now, for every numerical variable, we plot the histogram, the probability density plot, the QQ plot, and the box plot. But at the same time, we also do the normality test for you. So if the normality test failed, we print out the title with the red color and also give you the p-value. If it does not fail, we use the blue color. Color.
Okay.
I can change my variable here. For example, trip distance, what's the distribution? You can see I want to change to the, say, trip time in seconds. You can see we have a lot of short trips, right?
Yeah.
So you can also decide, okay, I want to export to my report. Now, okay, I'm done with my individual numerical variable exploration. Now I can go to the numerical categorical variable. For example, Redco, you can see that they have, say, six values, right? And also you can see that we have the payment type. You can see, okay, the majority is by credit card and cash.
Right.
And you can, I can export. Okay, now I'm done with my individual variable. I have gone through the numerical variable and the categorical variable. Now I want to know the multiple variable relationship, right?
Yeah.
So for the first question I have, usually have is that which variables are more related with my target variable. So we are doing the variable ranking for you. Click this go button. It will plot the bar chart. You see here? So you see here for the numerical variable, the most important variable is about kind of total amount. That makes sense. For the categorical variable, you see that the most important variable is the payment type. So you might be thinking, oh, really, I have really some good variables here, right? But keep another lesson, another mistake people, data science made a lot in their projects is about the target leaker. So think about this one, payment type. So if you really go into the process that data is generated, think about this. If you are a driver, I'm paying you by credit card. Every credit card transaction is trackable by IRA, right? IRS. So usually the driver will not hide such income. They will report, hey, this trip is tipped, how much is it tipped, right? But if I'm paying you by cash,
it's not
cash transaction is not trackable.
That's so the reason we should not stick on the always the highest rate of two. So you must know the domain you have.
You have to, when you see this kind of pattern in your data, in your variable ranking, you really need to think deeper into the process that is generating the data. So this is an example that, okay, this tool is helping you to identify the target leaker. So for example, we have another successful application of this tool. We were using this tool to work on a hospital readmission project. So we were given a wide data set with hundreds of variables. We know the target variable is readmission, is 0 or 1. Then we apply this tool to that data. We figure out, okay, the top ranked variable, there are probably 3 or 4 top ranked variables, extremely higher than others. But we see that when we look into that variable name, you identify those variables are all started with names such as readmission type, readmission location, readmission time, etc. So you can see that those are the target leaker. You should avoid including that target leaker into your model.
Such kind of data leak.
So so this is some successful application of this tool. And also, we also visualize the interaction between two categorical variables. Mm-hmm. And also here, for numerical variables, we also plot the segmented correlation matrix. So that means every the group of variables who are highly correlated are put together in this segmented correlation matrix. So you see here the trip distance, fair amount, total amount, and these three variables are highly correlated. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you can export this one to your report. And now, okay, you have the box plot, which is showing you the relationship between numerical variable and categorical variables.
Yep.
This will help you to investigate the relationship between numerical variable and categorical variable.
Yep.
For example, just now you see from the variable ranking, right? So you know which variables are highly correlated with your target variable, right?
Yeah.
Now this one, for example, you know the total amount is highly correlated, is the highest ranked known variable. If you come to this one, you see, okay, now let's see how the distribution of this numerical variable are different on these different levels of this categorical variable, right?
Yeah.
Let's see the total amount. This one is all jammed here. Mm. And so let me show you another one. Say the, it's another one, the good one. You see here. So this one can be helpful for you to understand. Say, for example, this variable is so highly ranked.
Yeah.
If I see significant distribution of this variable on the two different levels of a target variable, you can see, you have that sense that, okay, this variable is helping me differentiate these two, two values of this target variable. If you see, okay, even the highest ranked variable does not differentiate so much,
okay,
you might have that sense, okay, this data, the entire data may not be so relevant to my task, right? So this can help you to assess the relevance of the data to the business problem you want to address, right? And also at the same time, we do the chi-square test to help you, not chi-square test, actually t-test, to help you to see, okay, whether the distribution are significantly different among these two levels of the categorical variable.
This is very important also for data science, defining which features are important for the data.
So here, as I said, we help you to project the high dimension data to lower dimension. So we use the PCA to project.
Yeah.
So you can select
component analysis. Yeah.
You can select the different principal components to project on the different lower dimension space. So you see here you have probably two clusters here. And we also allow you to choose which categorical variable to color the different points. So if you see two clusters which are dominated by one single cluster label, you might be able to see, okay, I can draw a cutoff line, easily separate the cluster, right?
Yeah.
That means, okay, this task might be easy. But if you see two clusters, two colors are overlapping with each other in every cluster, might not be so easy. So this is another functionality to help you to assess the whether the problem is challenging or not, or in another way, whether the data is relevant or not to a machine learning task, right? Now, okay, usually projecting to two-dimension space can have some problems, such as some cluster after projecting might be overlapping with each other, right?
Yeah.
So we allow you to project to three-dimension space.
Yeah.
Of course, when you project to three-dimension space, the viewing angle matters. So we allow you to change the angles.
Yeah.
I scroll the bar. And also similarly, we also help you to do the PCA on the mixture of data types. It's a mixture of numerical and a mixture of categorical, because it's almost universally true that every data consists of both numerical and categorical. And in many times, even the categorical variable dominates the data, right? So we don't want to miss so much information, so we help you to do the PCA on both numerical and categorical. The mixture data. Similarly, you can scroll the bar.
Change
the viewing angle, you might have different impression, the clustering pattern. Now, assuming that, okay, I'm done with the single variable to multiple variable, numerical variable, and categorical variable. I'm done with my data exploration. Now I can click this button to generate a report. Yeah. To generate a report. And then, so this time, the code that you decided to output to that log file is running in the backend.
Yeah, it's generating an R file.
It's generating, it is using that R file to generate a R markdown. So it might take 1 or 2 minutes to complete.
So actually, it is the result will be markdown file that you can share with the team to get some insights about what kind of data we have, what we can do.
Exactly. So you see here now that the code is finished running. I can click the view report button. Click this button. Mm-hmm. Now this is the. I guess we can cut this off, right? Yeah. Now, this is the data report you can use to share with your team members and also share with the business owner to carry out a very productive data discussion.
Okay. Great. Okay. All these tools, actually, team data data processing pipeline, we just show a single piece of this whole work about the data exploration.
Yeah.
But this is just a single piece. There are more on the repository that you can explore, like integrating with the Visual Studio team services or other team services to define your timeline, project timeline, track your tasks within a data science project, integrate all this documentation there. You can find much more in the repository.
Yeah, so if I guess you are talking about the standard data science lifecycle. I think this component in this way, standard data science lifecycle is more like a thinking process.
Yeah.
You need to know what to do. What's the standardized way to do a data science project. But we also think about it in the way that what kind of tool we can use as a vehicle to implement this thinking process, right? So we are thinking about, okay, now you need to have a work item tracking system and to help you to track all the major steps you need to do, and for each major step, what are the tasks you need to complete.
Yeah.
And you also need to use this work item tracking system to do your scrum planning, right? So in our instruction of how to implement TDSP, we are saying, okay, now we are showing you how you can do this on Visual Studio Team Services.
Yeah.
I think Visual Studio Team Services is very good because, first of all, it has helped you to do the work item tracking and scrum planning very easily. Second of all, it allows you to connect a work item with a Git branch.
Yeah.
Because VSTS, Visual Studio Team Services integrates both work item tracking and Git versioning on the same platform. So you can easily link a work item with a Git branch. If you take that practice, you can take that practice to do some kind of quality assurance, a code review in your data science organization. So for many data scientists, they're not familiar with Git. They do not use Git because they would like to do a lot of ad hoc work by themselves. But as the new technology is coming out, which is enabling data scientists to directly operationalize their model as a product, I think the version control is very important now. Because previously, data scientists, they work in the backend. Whatever build model, whatever pipeline they build, they need to hand over to the software engineer. The software engineer will translate his code in R or Python into a C or Java or C sharp, right? And then push out as a product. So whatever the data scientist is doing in the backend has very minimal risk of breaking the product.
Okay.
Now, because of new capabilities such as in Azure machine learning, we are allowing data scientists to directly operationalize their machine learning model.
Yeah.
As a web service API. And the software engineer is just integrating that web service API into product.
Okay.
So, and also in Python, in SQL Server, with Microsoft R Server, you can directly operationalize your model as a stored procedure. And the product only needs to call that stored procedure to put your machinery solution into product. So think about this, if you continue doing whatever the data center is familiar to do through a lot of ad hoc without versioning, you have a very high risk that your work is going to break the product.
Yeah, sure.
So I think now is the time that for data scientists to think about this, how you can build up this kind of tradition or convention in your data science organization to do versioning, to do the quality assurance, in order to make sure that you minimize the risk of breaking the product.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. It was really a very productive discussion, Hang, and hope we will be continuing on this series and we will explore more opportunities around team data science process utilities. Hope to see you in next time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, before we really hang up, so this is the resource you can get.
We will share them in our videos.
For the utilities, project template, and all the instructions for how to implement the TBSP.
Yeah, we will share all these links with you on the video's webpage. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.